I don't know if they've even found all the shell casings yet, so I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it while continuing to go on with my daily activities. And I'm finding it a challenge as well, because I've decided not to discuss this any longer in front of my son. One of the first questions, like I said, that he asked was, why are the police killing that man? And thanks for not giving me the pat answer that, well, that's just the area that you live in.
And that was Allison, who lives in the neighborhood and spoke out to the issue of what she saw the night that Brian Andrus was put into the hospital by three police officers who apparently were responding to a call concerned about the way he had parked his car and his angry temper and possibly raised voices from inside the house. An unnecessary and tragic shooting, and luckily one that did not result in any other injuries to passers-by, but very well could have. A matter of concern for that community, a matter of concern for the entire Santa Cruz City community, considering that the city police don't just operate in the Button Street community, they operate citywide. And when they shot down a man downtown, Happy John Dine, who turned out to have nothing other than a toy gun, and indeed virtually every non-police witness said he had nothing in his hands, or at least they saw no toy gun in his hands, those who we talked to, and indeed those who testified to the district attorney, it was still held to be a justifiable shooting. There were no investigation was made into the firearms policy that the city police have of apparently shooting first and talking later. Interestingly enough, that seems not to be the case when people are better armed. So, for instance, in San Francisco, when a man with a shotgun was besieged by police in his vehicle several days ago in a story in the San Francisco Chronicle, they waited him out and they talked him out and he came out. And similarly, in another case in Waco, not the famous Waco case, but another case, an individual was talked out because he had a serious weapon. But apparently, if the police feel they can swagger in, threaten people, and then when they encounter resistance, can use lethal force, we have a very, very serious problem in our community. And I'm not saying that all the answers have been given on this show tonight, all the testimony is clear. It's certainly inappropriate behavior to be threatening anyone with a baseball bat. On the other hand, if somebody invades your house, armed people invade your house and are rousting a beloved partner of yours, it's not a totally difficult to understand response to try to defend that person, perhaps unwise, but certainly not beyond our comprehension. And again, we don't have, I hope to have an interview with Lori Andrus, the woman who was involved in all this. And indeed, she did give some testimony to the Santa Cruz County Sentinel the next day. You can read that in the Tuesday Sentinel. And perhaps we'll be covering that in our next show somewhat. What we're really hoping to cover is the reaction of the Button Street community in taking some action to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again, and taking some action to make sure that the police officers involved are thoroughly investigated. You heard the analysis of cop watcher Becky Johnson on some of the situation. We will have more to say about Officer Garazio and his history of violence in terms of contacts with citizens, even lethal violence in the case of a homeless man killed in 1996, and a suspicious coroner's report involved with that. But instead of simply, we're not so much trying to point fingers and names at particular officers, though I think it's important to hold every officer accountable, considering, however, the broader policies. It is Chief Belcher, it is our city council, and ultimately it is us. We are the ones responsible for these officers and what they're doing. the bullets they're loosing into the community and into the human people in our community. And that's something we have to think about. A little music here, and then I'm going to turn to another subject in the very few remaining minutes. For those listening concerned specifically with the issue of the Button Street shooting, I will be returning on Sunday at 11 o'clock for a 2.5-hour show. That's the next edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides on 96.3 FM. And I will also be leaving with the studio what's called a loop tape about this issue. We will be playing interviews repeatedly. You'll be able to hear parts of what you've heard and other interviews that we weren't able to play because of time constraints if you stay tuned in the days ahead. And Free Radio Santa Cruz has a very varied programmership, I should say. The different programmers have different ideas about what they put out on the air. Some of it may not interest you, and that's as it should be because we have a diverse community out there. I find some of the music impossible to listen to. However, we are going to be making some tapes available to the station to play that essentially go through these interviews again and go through other interviews and continue our attempt to find some truth and put some pressure on city officials, police officials, the Citizens Police Review Board, the media, and the broader community to take some action on this issue of unrestrained police violence, which really is what this is. Let's hear a little of Peter, Paul, and Mary and get some unrestrained music for a moment.
I'm
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary. Monday morning, adopted and arranged by, wow, all three of them, and a fourth, back in the mid-60s. Well, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and the Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show will be kind of winding down and ending at 8 o'clock. But before we go, we're going to kind of do a few updates. For those who have been following the show, Salinas, the city council had a discussion and vote on a law making peaceful spear changing after dark a criminal offense punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. That became law on Tuesday. I should say it was passed into law, probably to become law within the next month. And we went to the city council to urge them to reconsider this proposal, which actually was modeled on an ordinance from Santa Cruz, the ordinance championed by Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, all those good liberals who are have no problem with what the police force is doing in our community, and who have no problem with treating the homeless people like second and third class citizens, and apparently treating a lot of people in houses like second and third class citizens. In any case, we talked to the city council in Salinas. They gave us a hearing, and we actually apparently convinced one person. We got a 6-1 vote. We changed one vote on this issue, which isn't saying much. I shouldn't say, it certainly wasn't just us who did the vote changing, but we were a part of that. Here's a selection from the Salinas City Council meeting. I initially talked to them about another issue, the sleeping ban.
Council members, my name is Robert Morris. I'm from out of county and from Santa Cruz. Came down here today to speak on an item that's coming up on the agenda. But before I do, I'm not going to talk about that. But I'll be talking about that later. But it's a related item, and I mentioned for that reason. Am I coming through too loudly? I can never tell when I'm talking at a mic. I can back off a bit. A little closer. Thank you. I work with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, in Santa Cruz, and another group called the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, which is the onerous law we have in Santa Cruz that makes it illegal for homeless people at night to either sleep or cover up with blankets on any public property whatsoever. And since we have no campgrounds in Santa Cruz, and since it's also illegal to sleep on much private property, even with the consent of the owner, with some limited exceptions, we have 500 to 1,500 homeless people who every night have no place to lay their heads and are threatened with $162 tickets. What relevance does this have for Salinas? Well, I understand from a brief conversation with one of your legal people here that you have a similar ban against sleeping in vehicles here in Salinas, and I haven't investigated it closely, but I want to encourage you to look into it, because it's really a basic human rights violation to go after people for doing something that they have no choice about, namely falling asleep at night. We're not talking about urinating or defecating. We're not talking about abusive behavior. We're talking about what every one of us has to do every night. So I'm glad that the ACLU has drawn attention to another item on the agenda that will be discussed, and I hope that it will do a similar kind of consideration of your current law around any sleeping ban that you have in your code, and hope it receives scrutiny. In cities like Eugene, Oregon, Eugene has, for example, decriminalized sleeping in industrial areas, so you don't have to have an all or nothing kind of thing. You can make it legal for people to sleep in some parts of the city where they have to sleep, and in that way alleviate the burden. In Florida, safe sleeping zones have been set up by federal court order. Santa Monica is taking its sleeping ban to the United Nations and the World Court to consider as a basic human rights violation, which I think it is, against poor and homeless people. And I urge Salinas and your council to consider whether there are legal spaces for homeless people to sleep in Salinas, and if not, consider amending any law you have that bans sleeping, because that is a foolish and cruel joke which needs to be reconsidered. While you may not be able to provide for all, you must be sure you do not criminalize a basic human right that affects many poor people. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I have a question? Sure. Your question, I want to follow up with legal. Okay. Do we have a ban
Bob Zier.
I haven't had a chance to look at the ordinance. I can certainly research that and get a memo back to council just to inform you of what we do have on the books regarding that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And this I was really talking about is the paying law. The paying law that you are trying to pass in the city council here is unconstitutional.
That is on the agenda?
No, it's not on the agenda. Yeah, it's in the paper.
And that was some of the discussion at the Salinas City Council meeting last Tuesday. We actually found the discussion very informative because most of the speakers were against the law that made it illegal for people to peacefully ask for spare change. The law was couched as an abusive panhandling law, one that went after people who were abusive, and indeed that was a part of the law. But the significant sections had to do with not being allowed to be 10 feet from a store, not being allowed to be near a car, not being allowed to hold up a sign or say a word after dark, even if you were the politest person in the world. And the American Civil Liberties Union came out against it, and actually the papers headlined that opposition in Santa Cruz. We had similar ACLU opposition, though not as high profile. And, of course, the ACLU locally has not taken our own ask for a dime after dark, go to jail law to court or supported any cases. And, indeed, the cases are beginning to mount up in our local courts. So I think that's something for all of us to think about. And if anybody has an interest in this subject, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And we can use your assistance. And we can also perhaps give you some more information about the subject, because we are trying to change the laws and practices here in Santa Cruz to bring Santa Cruz and the rest of the country into the 20th century. I guess it's the 21st century coming up. Maybe we need to get back to the 19th century when life was more peaceful and less was criminalized. In any case, we need to head towards a civilized and humane society. The Salinas City Council is going to be, again, hopefully I'll be leaving a tape here in the studio at some point that will enable you to hear more of that discussion and debate than we have time for on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. And just as a taste of yet another subject that we're going to hope to provide a longer tape on, the Watsonville Youth Police Abuse Forum, which happened last night. It was a forum in which ACLU Northern California attorney John Crew spoke at some length on how police departments are misusing so-called gang laws to criminalize youth by the scores, youth who have done nothing, youth who are simply at the wrong place at the wrong time, or who police decided they want to take pictures of. And what we as a community, what the young people in that community and presumably in our community can do about it. We're going to hear a little bit about that just before I leave, and hopefully, again, we'll be able to play more of that at a later time. This, again, is a speech by John Crew, ACLU attorney, to the Watsonville community last night.
But just as an overview, as Ramon mentioned, I want to start by talking a little bit about the sorts of things that we're seeing statewide in terms of police misconduct issues, particularly dealing with young people and young people of color primarily. Then I want to talk a little bit about some basic information about knowing your rights and how to use those rights with some common sense in encounters with police. And also a little bit about how to deal with those encounters when they're happening, what to do afterwards. There's a lot of literature on the table. I don't know if most of you saw it, but there's a number of handouts back there. I encourage you to take a look at it. In particular, this whole very extensive newspaper is all aimed at young people knowing their rights, and we strongly encourage you to get this, and also some wallet-sized cards on dealing with police. But let me talk now about what we are seeing is really the number one problem, most common, in some ways the most serious problem, growing problem in police misconduct in dealing with young people, particularly young people of color. And that has to do with a variety of tactics that law enforcement is using statewide, and frankly spreading throughout the nation to deal with problems of gang violence. And let me start by saying that obviously gang violence is a very serious problem in many of our communities. It's a horrific problem in terms of the toll that it takes on young people's lives and on their safety. but some of the tactics that law enforcement are using in this area unfortunately throws everybody together in the same net and labels young people sometimes gang members who are not and treats them as criminals when they're not. Now that's obviously a very important civil liberties issue, a civil rights concern, a legal concern. But also, from our point of view, is dangerous because it harms the fight against real crime and violence. Now, you talk to cops, they say the best weapon they have in fighting crime, it's not their gun, it's not their baton or their pepper spray, it is the trust and confidence of the community they serve. Y'all may have heard about community policing. Everybody in the country is now doing community policing, which is based on the idea that we're going to have the police work in close contact and partnership with the community to work on public safety issues. And that's a sound strategy that makes sense, but if the police are out there treating large segments of the community as though they're criminals, violating their rights, they're not going to be able to trust the police and work with the police on dealing with underlying problems. So if you really want to get a handle from a public safety standpoint on the very serious issue of gang violence, you need to start making some basic distinctions between people who are innocent of criminal activity and those that may actually be involved in it. You need to break down some of the assumptions that are made about people, sometimes that are frankly rooted in stereotypes and racism. And so what we've seen all too common the scenario is, you know, young people, particularly young people of color, in some communities it's Latino, in some it's African American, in some it's Asian American, Southeast Asian in particular, for example, in Orange County, who are stopped for no reason by police on a corner, not involved in any illegal activity, asked to produce identification, officer writes down the information on a little card, sometimes they ask them to line up and take the picture, often not without an arrest. Officers go away, young people feel they've been harassed. That's what the young people see and experience, but that's not the end of the story. The question then is, what happens with that information that the police have obtained? And what happens to that photograph that they took of an individual, which, by the way, was probably taken illegally, but we'll get to that in a minute. What is happening is law enforcement throughout the state of California are compiling lists of suspected gang members. And indeed, in California, there is a statewide computerized database where law enforcement has secretly labeled 250,000 young people in California as alleged gang members. And I say secretly labeled because they don't tell you when they label you a gang member. Now, there are 150 law enforcement agencies in California, actually some in Nevada too, that are signed on to this database. It used to be called the GRADE system. Now it's called CalGang. I need to say that we do not have any evidence that the actual law enforcement agencies in Santa Cruz County are at least yet part of that database. They were not linked up as far as we know. You disagree with that at all? That sounds good. Okay, but the latest information we had is that they weren't. It's almost irrelevant because it's clear that virtually every law enforcement agency is keeping their own list of whether or not they're linked up. Let me quickly tell you where GRADE comes from. It is a computer database. It is a gang fighting strategy that was first developed in Los Angeles. Now, it is true that Los Angeles knows something about gang violence. They've had a real problem with it. But from my point of view, again from a common sense point of view, have the law enforcement agencies in Los Angeles been successful in fighting gang violence? Have the tactics they've used it engendered confidence from the community in dealing with these problems? We would suggest that you don't imitate tactics that have been proven to be a failure. But unfortunately, the tactics that have been used in Los Angeles in particular have spread throughout the state, and we're seeing them now all over Northern California.
And that was John Crew of the American Civil Liberties Union speaking in Watsonville last night. I'm going to hopefully be able to make that whole hour-long, actually it's more like 80 minutes, discussion and following audience interaction available to the station to play later. And you can, of course, join me on Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Sunday at 11. We're going to return with more and more. We have a whole bunch of tapes piling up we'd like to play for you. And as for folks concerned about the Button Street shooting and about police misconduct in our community, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you have any new information about the Brian Andrus shooting. And if you have any other problems with police misconduct, give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. It's time now for you to educate yourself on broader, greener issues on subjects that I always wish I knew something about, but never bothered to educate myself on, except when I happened to hear it coming over the radio on Uncle Dennis's show. You're going to hear about Earth First. You're going to hear some stuff you didn't know, and maybe a little bit that you did, and it's all going to be put in a way that is both entertaining and educational. Dennis, take over.